Northwestern Medicine, relentless in their pursuit of better health care. Learn more at nm.org/better.
Time for the Weekend Health. Dr. Jeremy Silver, Medical Director, Emergency Medicine, Northwestern's Kishwaukee Hospital. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
Dean, good morning. Good to talk to you.
Good to have you with us here this week. We went through unprecedented cold, at least unprecedented in the last year anyway, in the Chicago area. Is there a result of that? Are you seeing more people in the emergency room because of the cold weather, exposure, hypothermia, all the usual?
I think you do, and particularly in those populations that are at risk, folks that, particularly folks that don't have a place to stay, are particularly impacted by that. But, I think folks just, it's easy to get caught up in the fun of the season, and there's a lot of great things going on outside, football games and other activities, that it's easy to lose track, particularly when alcohol is involved. And so you can get cold pretty quickly.
Yeah, I was just going to ask you about the alcohol factor. People are doing their outside activities and maybe spiking their beverages with a little bit of alcohol. Is that good or bad in the cold weather?
It doesn't help. It reduces your body's ability to sense when it's cold. You feel warm because your metabolism is changing, but you're actually losing heat quickly. And so, very very important that if you're going outside and it's cold, or if it's cool and wet, which can be just as bad as if it's very cold weather, be dressed accordingly: gloves, hat, scarf, etc.
What is the best way to dress for weather like that? Everyone says layers is the way to go. Do you agree with that?
When you're saying when it's cold and wet, or just freezing cold?
Freezing cold is what I was thinking, but either way. To me, cold and wet is way worse than anything else.
Well, yes, because you have that extra sort of aspect of the evaporative cooling. When the water gets on your skin, the heat goes into the water droplets, and then the water droplets carry the heat away from your body. So it's not just heat passing passively in the environment; it's through the moisture as well. But layers is absolutely the way to go, because you can layer them on and peel them off as you warm up. But that gives you an extra layer of protection when you start to shiver or get cold. And certainly a hat is so important. We do lose somewhere around 30% of our heat through our heads. And those of us who are unfortunate not to have a full head of hair, I'm thinking of myself, a hat can be key. But also, don't forget mittens or gloves. It is easy to get frostbite outside when it's cold, so gloves are also important.
My well into adulthood, my mother would tell me, put a hat on. You're a bald man. Put your hat on.
your mom was spot on, Dean.
Thanks for reminding me I'm a bald man, number one. But yes, I know what to put a hat on. I'm a grown man. I know to put a hat on. But I appreciate that she cared enough to say such a thing. But why is that we lose all the heat off the top of our heads like that?
There's a big blood supply to the scalp and face, and so that's where the heat gets lost, is in the blood vessels. Blood vessels carry blood, and the heat is in the blood, and then the heat escapes as the vessels get close to the skin, and that the head and neck just have a ton of that coverage.
Okay, all right. Well, that's good to know. That's I never understood that. I just figure it's at the top of my body, heat rises. That must be that's where it's going, just like it does in your house.
That it does. So I don't know. Maybe lay down.
Right, or stand on your head or something. Right.
Yeah, exactly.
So what is the optimal? You talked about wrapping yourself in layers when you go outside. Is there a beverage of choice that actually is a good one to have when you're outside? I'm thinking hot cocoa, but maybe there's something else that is even better.
anything that's warm, hot cocoa, hot tea, even speaking of moms, my mom always would have the hot water with her, which I can never understand or wrap my mind around, but she used that to stay warm. So anything that's warmed up is going to be a good thing.
What do you mean she had hot water? Like in a hot water bottle or in a thermos? Or
in a thermos. She would sip the hot water and stay warm because she loves water. So, you know, and listen, she's probably going to outlive all of us.
Okay, all right. Well, it would have never occurred to me to do that, but that makes such perfect sense. Warm up some water, put it in your fancy coffee mugs that you're walking around with these days, these coffee thermoses, because that's better than coffee, right? Coffee has its downsides when you're trying to warm up, right?
You know, I think the key is heat. So I'd be less focused on the type of drink and more focused on the fact that it's warm. It's going to warm you from the inside, literally the inside out. Yeah, and I think, Dean, the other key is knowing how to spot if you, or particularly if your child is becoming cold. There are some hallmarks of, hey, you know, it's time to get inside. I can certainly talk about some of those.
Let's take a quick break, and we'll come right back more with Dr. Jeremy Silver in just a moment. And your questions for the doctor, 312-981-7200. We love hearing from you. Right now, it's Dr. Jeremy Silver, our weekend health feature. And from our text line, Dr. Silver, the question, how do I know if I have whooping cough? I hear all about it in the news lately. How do I know the difference between that and just a regular old cough?
Great question. Yeah, we are definitely seeing an increase in whooping cough, and otherwise known as pertussis. That is a brutal cough that you just are coughing and coughing and coughing to the point where you may even break little blood vessels around your eyes and your face.
Oh, wow.
So that can absolutely be a sign in kids and adults. I mean, it's just this persistent cough that won't seem to stop. So if your primary concern is the cough, definitely go get checked out because there's treatments and you shouldn't have to live like that. It's miserable.
Is the treatment something to stop the coughing, or is it to suppress the coughing? In other words, the cause is still there. You're just getting rid of the symptoms. Or is it something which works to break whatever is causing the coughs in the first place?
All of the above. So there are antibiotics that can actually kill the underlying pathogen. And then there's medicine that can help break up the sputum or the schmutz in your lungs that you feel like you can't get it up. And then there's medicine to actually help with the suppress the cough so you can get some rest at night and feel rested for the morning.
Yeah, I remember back in the day I had just a terrible cough, and my doc said that like the more that I was coughing and irritating things, the worse it was going to get. That we needed to suppress the irritation in order to get things to calm down.
Well, coughing's good in the sense that your body saying, you know, hey, there's something in the lungs you need to get rid of. But too much of a good thing definitely can apply, and it can hurt. It can make your lungs sore, and of course, it trying to get sleep at night when you're coughing is miserable as well.
Yeah, I've heard a lot of people coughing. I wondered if it's the whooping cough that everybody is talking about. This is Julie calling in from Wisconsin with a question for Dr. Silver. Hi, Julie. You're on WGN.
Hi. Good morning. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you.
Oh, good. I'm kind of a head case. So I have to tell you real quick, I'll tell you what happened to me. 2 years ago, I had emergency surgery. I had a ruptured peptic ulcer. I had to have emergency surgery. I had a Gram patch. I came out of surgery and had blood clots like everywhere. Had to have surgery, put some stents in a couple blood clots in my legs, and I had it in my blood clots in my veins and my arteries. I was in the hospital for the ICU for 15 days. I had to have a blood transfusion, and we never have figured out where, you know, why I had got the blood clots and why I had the ulcer. So now I'm on Eliquis twice a day, 25 milligram twice a day, at the lowest dose you can be on. And I'm taking pantoprazole for the ulcer because all the tests they did on me, you know, it wasn't the, you know, I didn't have the acidity level or the hepatitis, what, no cancer. Am I going to have to be on this pantoprazole the rest of my life? I mean, I know I'm going to have to be on Eliquis.
No, I know Eliquis, doctor, if I'm correct, it's a blood thinner. Is that correct?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
And this other medication, is that like sort of not antacid, but that's something for ulcers or, you know, that kind of disorder. Is that right?
Correct. It's a pantoprazole is an acid reducer.
So what do you think for Julie here?
Questions. Yeah, Julie. First of all, it sounds like you made it through an incredible experience, and I mean incredible in every possible way. So I'm glad that you're here with us to tell us the story. And you're not alone. There are many people that develop blood clots and other conditions like the ulcer you mentioned, and the medical team just is at a loss to figure out why. And so, you know, there's certainly a plethora of doctors out there, and I always support getting a second opinion if you're still feeling like you're trapped or you'd like answers. But sometimes, just at this where we are in the learning curve of medicine, sometimes it's just very, very difficult to understand the why. But I wish you really good luck, and it sounds like you're on the right track.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much. That is a lot for somebody to have to go through and, you know, try to digest and to understand. We have time for one final question on our text line. And this is a question that we get every week. We answer it every week. Yet people keep asking the question every week. So I guess we'll keep answering the question every week. Is it okay for me to get my flu shot and COVID vaccine at the same time?
Yes.
For the 100th time, yes.
It's also, by the way, Dean, it's also perfectly fine to space them out if you want to. There's no harm in either way, but why not knock it out in one session?
I guess the question being, you know, for possible side effects, that's what people have said in the past. Possible side effects for, do I get them in the same arm? Do I get them in different arms? Because there's going to be discomfort that follows
that's
that.
That's actually a really interesting point you bring up, if you have two more seconds, Dean. There was a study at one point, and I can't tell you which one it was. They looked at which arm you got the vaccine in. And for those that switched arms, they had a better response. And there's a thought that maybe there's localized immune centers that you can tune up. So there may be something to that. The other quick comment I'll make is that if you do have a tendency to have allergic reactions, if you space the vaccines out, the advantage to that is that if you have a reaction, then you know it was probably to that particular shot, as opposed to getting three vaccines at once. You have an allergic reaction, let's say. And then you don't know, was it the flu, was it the COVID, et cetera.
Yeah.
So there may be some strategic advantage there.
All right. Well, until next week when somebody else asks exactly the same question, we'll deal with that then. Dr. Jeremy Silver, always great information. Always great to talk to you. Have a great Sunday, Doc. Thank you.
Dean, pleasure. Thank you.
Dr. Jeremy Silver.